this morning. So, quick story. I mentioned before that my wife and family and I have moved to California. For me, it's a return to the land of my ancestors. My great-great-grandparents came out here on covered wagons during the early 1900s, and grandparents followed them, or great-grandparents followed them during the Dust Bowl era, but I've never lived out here, and spent a significant portion of my life in Texas and Oklahoma, where they have this well-known weather phenomena called tornadoes. So out there, they think we're crazy for living on this liquid land that's quaking all the time. And they would never, like, you're moving to California? You're going to fall into the ocean. That's the thing. It's always in the back of the mind. And a lot of us think, why in the world would you live in Tornado Alley? I mean, have you even seen Twister with the cows that fly across and Bill Paxton's hair got all messed up? It's crazy. It's crazy. When I first moved to Oklahoma as an adult, I was very confused. I did not know who to listen to. So there was one night, Marie and our oldest daughter, they were in New Hampshire on summer vacation, early summer vacation in May, right during tornado season. And I was home with, at that time, she was our youngest daughter, Clara. She was just over a year old. And I was on the couch with my laptop, and I had, it's tornado season, so I had one tab on the weather and the other tab on the LA Lakers playoff game. So you know it was a really long time ago. I'm a Lakers fan. It's been a brutal decade. So I'm watching the Lakers game, and my phone starts going off with the tornado warning. And making all those weird, not normal text noises. And so I mute the game, and I click over to the weather, and they say, if you are between 81st and 91st on Olive Avenue, take cover now. And I didn't even hear the W. I started hearing the train sound. In Oklahoma, we had it upstairs, and my daughter's room was upstairs, and I have no clue how I made it up the stairs in two bounds. It was Superman-type adrenaline, boom, boom. And I scooped Clara up, and we were downstairs, and I heard the tornado going over our house, and we had one of those under-the-stairs Harry Potter closets, and I was there, and my phone starts ringing a lot, and so much that I can't even pick it up as I hear this. And after a couple minutes, the danger had passed, and I got the voicemail, and it was my mother who lives in Manila, Philippines. And I got the voicemail, and she said, hey, Mike, I was just in staff meeting, and we all got this, like, urge to pray for you. Like, is everything okay? Like, I don't know what to do with that. I don't know how moms and their kids are connected. I don't even know what to do. But at the exact moment, a tornado was passing over my house that would go 4 miles to the east and flatten an entire neighborhood. Had family and Christian brothers and sisters across the world praying for us. So I really wanted to know, I didn't want that to happen again, but I didn't know who to listen to. Because it seemed like there were people on two extremes. There's one guy connected to our church that for 4 months out of every year, he would spend the night, spend the evening from 6 p.m. all the way to the next morning in his tornado shelter. And he would post on Facebook the movie that he was watching that night. He had a flat screen TV down there. He had a refrigerator. I think he still had some Y2K leftovers in his down there. And he would just have a good old time down there. And then there were other people in our church that after that tornado, they posted themselves, posted videos of themselves during that tornado, and they were on the back porch, like, look, it's a huge tornado. Wow, there's a cow flying. This is awesome. So I didn't know which person to listen to. And so the news had suggested that you put on a helmet on your kids, but I didn't just want my kids to have a helmet on. So I got my tornado helmet, and this is from circa 2013, and this is how I would wade through all of the tornadoes with my pink Hello Kitty tornado hat. And it's kind of like that in life. Like, we know storms are going to come. We know hard things are going to come. And a lot of times we go to two extremes. I think a majority of people are preppers. We don't want to be caught by surprise. We don't want life to hurt us. And we try to make ourselves invulnerable to these things that come at us. We get stronger. We try to prepare. We on the plane, we can look and find exactly where the exit rows are, and know where the lights are, know that our seat cushion is a flotation device. We can try to prep. But if we're on the other side of the extreme, we're like, oh, let's just take it. Let's just go for it. I don't want to die young. I don't want to take care of myself. I don't want to leave anything on the table. I want to burn out. I can sleep when I get to heaven. Whatever, just bring it on. But really, what happens in life so much is things do catch us by surprise. We can't control the storms. And going to one extreme or the other will wind up sinking us. During one of the hardest times in my life, I came across this picture on the internet. It's a popular meme. Perhaps you've seen it before. It says, God, I have a plan for your life. This is what it looks like. There's the Holy Spirit, and there's you. Can anyone relate to this? That's what it feels like. So the question, before we get into our text for today, the question is, how do we face life well, even though we know it's going to hurt? So we can't protect ourselves from everything, but we don't want to be reckless either. And to set up our story this morning, I just want to refresh you. A little bit about the chapter. If you want to turn to Matthew chapter 16, you can. In the beginning of this chapter, Jesus is being questioned by these people called the Pharisees. And they do not believe Jesus is who he says he is. He is threatening to their power. The Pharisees are wanting to catch him in some sort of trap so that they can discredit him. And they come to Jesus, who has healed people, and he's bringing people and helping. His preaching is turning people's hearts back to God. And they come to him, and they try to trick him. And they say, hey, if you're really who you say you are, why don't you do a miracle? And Jesus puts them in their place, says, you guys, you're experts in the Bible, but all your God knowledge hasn't moved from your head to your heart or from your head to your hands. You guys have missed the point. Don't ask me to do tricks for you. You're only going to believe it if you get the sign of Jonah. If a prophet dies for 3 days and comes back again, and he turns and leaves. And then there's this funny scene where they get on the boat, Jesus and his followers, and they get on this boat to cross the lake. And Jesus says, watch out for the yeast of the Pharisees. Just watch out for that. And all of his disciples start freaking out. Like, oh, we forgot the bread. It's on the shore. Oh, Jesus is going to be so ticked. It's going to be so, John, I told you to remember the bread. No, it was Peter. No. You know, and Jesus knows what they're saying, and he explains. Like, that attitude, that emphasis, the way they approach God, it's all about earning and rule-keeping. They've lost the heart of it, and they kind of relax a little bit. And then Jesus asks, you know, to contrast the Pharisees, who didn't believe Jesus was the Son of God, they didn't believe in his miracles, didn't believe in his mission, Jesus asks his disciples, his students, and says, okay, guys, what do you think? Who do you say I am? And they give a couple of answers, and finally Peter gets it right. And Peter says, you are the Son of the living God. You are our Messiah that's going to deliver us from, you know, our nation has been under Roman rule and Babylonian rule. And finally, you are the one that's going to deliver us. And he has this, one of the high points in Peter's life. He gets a big slap on the back from Jesus. Yes, no one, Jesus says, has revealed this to you except God. God's opened your eyes. You've got it. Yes. Good job. And on you, I'm going to build this church. You are the rock. And on this rock, I'm going to build this movement of people that will be an unstoppable force of good for humanity. And then we'll pick up in chapter 16, verse 21. And it goes like this. From that time on, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law. And he must be killed and on the third day raised to life. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. Never, Lord, he said. This shall never happen to you. This shall never happen to you. You know, picture this. Peter has a little bit of swagger now. He's like, I just got this right. God's telling me exactly who Jesus is. Jesus says this is, and it's the first of four times that Jesus predicts his own death and resurrection. And Peter's got confidence just oozing. Like, okay, Son of God, come over here. It's death and resurrection. Okay, let's just go over this from a PR perspective. Gonna die a shameful death on a Roman cross? You're a Jew? Like, no, Jesus. That's not the plan at all. Let's do it like this. Let's say we keep going towards Jerusalem. We pick up some folks around the way. Maybe you could heal a couple people. Couple of lepers, couple of lame folks, gather up some forces. Then we'll go into Jerusalem. We'll take Jerusalem, put you as king and high priest, and give you grab lots of power. And it's going to be awesome, Jesus. We've been waiting for this for hundreds and hundreds of years, and finally this is going to happen. Puts a little bit of a kink in the plan. If you die on a cross. And then Jesus, Jesus is going to respond to him. But how many times do we do that to God? God's taking us through life. We're doing our best to follow Jesus, and we have our plan. And we're going to graduate high school, maybe hopefully in the top half of the class, not in the part of the class that makes the top half possible. We're going to go to college. We're going to graduate without any student debt. We're going to meet the person of our dreams. And we get married. We get a job that pays really well. We have beautifully behaved children with no health complications. We get promotion after promotion after promotion at work. The intimacy in our marriages just happens. It's like, whoops, we have intimacy. I love you too. And we're going through life, and we retire at an early age, and we can go wherever we want to go. It's just so easy. There's no, on our trips, there's never any delays in our retirement. There's every plane takes off on time and it's down on time. We never get sick. Our kids never get sick. This will never happen to me. If I'm honest, there's a lot of times when I've taken God aside and said, no, God, this isn't the plan. Suffering? And then God's like, you pastor a church. What did you think the plan was? But God, everything's supposed to be easy. Everyone's supposed to get along. Everyone's supposed to read the Bible the same way. It's good. Come on, this wasn't the plan. And then far too many times I've heard the same response that Peter got. And Jesus, in this famous passage, says, Jesus turned to him and says, get behind me, Satan. Ouch. Talk about contrasts, something that would knock Peter off his balance. Hey, God's spoken to you, and also get behind me. You are Satan. Satan is using you right now. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. That's important to catch. Then Jesus said to his disciples, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. So, that part. The merely human concerns. And then Jesus starts in verse 24, going towards these three statements that they're not like a formula, but they're road markers for us as we follow Jesus to know, like, if we're following Jesus. And this was so counterintuitive. There's a great book called The Upside Down Kingdom of God that deals a lot with the counterintuitive nature of following Jesus, because we are humans. We have such a limited perspective. One of the biblical writers says, now we see dimly as if through a veil, like we don't have it. We don't have God's perspective. And Jesus was inviting Peter and all of his followers to go above that and say, hey, there's something much bigger than your laser beam, narrow human focus. And there's a bigger story going on than what you know. And God is inviting us too. Whether you're here checking out the church thing and you're not really sure about religion or all that, you're in the right place. I'm so glad you're here today. Or whether you've been following Jesus as long as you can remember, God is inviting us today to lay down our human perspective and say, God, show me the bigger picture. I've got this in my life that's a stumbling block. I've got this agenda. I've got these plans. And God is saying, hold on. Lay down your concerns. And in exchange, get my perspective. This next verse, verse 25. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me will find it. Look at that again. Like, huh? That doesn't make sense. Oh, I'm a prepper. I'm saving my life. I've got the tornado shelter. I've got this. I've got that or whatever. So I'm supposed to lay down my life if I want to keep it? That's an oxymoron, God. Except it's more than one word. Like, whoever loses their life for me will find it? Reminds me of this book Lewis Carroll wrote called Through the Looking Glass, Alice Through the Looking Glass. Anyone ever read it? Before you think I'm trying to brag about being some literary snob or something like that, the only reason I knew about this book is because Star Trek had a few episodes called Through the Looking Glass. So I Googled them and read the synopsis of Alice Through the Looking Glass. But really, this is kind of something that'll help. Look at James Tiberius Kirk. My goodness. The future looks bright if we can all wear vests like that, right? Sign me up for Star Trek. But I think in verse 25, when Jesus is saying, whoever loses their life for me will find it, it's really helped if we understand the way this looking glass, through the looking glass world looks, that Alice steps in. She steps through a mirror, and the laws of this new world that she's in are completely different. One of them is that if you want to stay still, you have to run, and that's how you stay still. If you want to move towards something, you move away from it. So it's like this opposite world, and that's what Jesus is saying. Like, we can try on our own to live a good life, to be excellent, to be pure, to be good, to be joyful, but our own efforts will only take us so far. The scriptures say our righteousness, our right living, is like filthy rags compared to what God can do. And Jesus is saying, from a human perspective, yes, it's all about what you do, but there's something much, much bigger going on here. He goes on in verse 26, what good will it be for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? I don't know how many times in my almost 42 years on this earth, I've known exactly what God should do for my life. And I've prayed about it. I prayed the prayer of Jabez about it. I prayed a prayer circle around it. Did all, don't judge me. I know some of you have done it too. God, this is what should happen. This is what should happen, only to find a closed door. I'll never forget in seminary, I changed my major from theater to theology and graduated and didn't have a job, so I just kept going to school. And I was taking Greek 1 for the second time, so you can tell I was a really good student. And one of the semesters, this opportunity came up with a ministry friend. They were going to do some dramas at this big youth rally at the Pontiac Silverdome in Detroit, Michigan. And this old friend from theater says, hey, you'd be perfect for this part. You're gonna go, and there's gonna be thousands of teenagers there, and it's just gonna be, you've gotta come with us. So I went to my professor, Dr. Ron Myers. I said, I need to ask you a question. And he said, what's your name again? A very forgettable student. And I told him about the scenario, and he paused. He said, okay, yeah, I know a little bit about your story, but you said yes to this class, and that's like a deal you made with God. Like, God was leading you here, and I really think if you have the talent, this opportunity will come along again. So, no, I will not excuse you from class. I think you need to be here. And I was ticked. Like, I thought maybe, who knew? Like, this is a ministry opportunity. Maybe someone will see me on stage and say, that goofy skit guy, that guy needs to come be the senior pastor of our megachurch. Talk about through the looking glass world. Like, I don't know what, but I was so disappointed and so mad. And here I am studying Greek stuff where I could be out doing ministry, like real ministry and saving souls. And so I stayed in town, said goodbye to my friends, and went to church that weekend. And they made an announcement. They were like, hey, we're going through a staff transition. We're going to need some help around the office. If you're interested, let us know. I was interested. And that's how I got my first job. If I had been in Detroit, I wouldn't have been able to weasel my way on to a church staff at all. I was like, oh, what would it have been? Maybe not, wouldn't have forfeited my own soul? But it definitely would have been horrible if I had said, no, God, I'm going to ignore this authority figure that you've put in my life, this professor. I'm going to do my own thing because this is where I'm gifted and talented. I'm obviously not talented at biblical languages. Like, I'm talented to go be with people and do this. My life would have been completely, completely different. And that experience, working on that church staff, learning what I'm good at, learning what I'm not good at, that's mostly what I learned, actually fed my soul. And as those lessons that I learned in those years allowed me to sustain my soul and grow in emotional health and grow in emotional maturity. If most of us are honest, we'll gain the world or gain control of our own world. But if they're not subject to God's plans, we'll wind up getting what we want at the expense of our own soul. That same professor told me it's wise to push on doors in life. It's wise to knock on doors in life. But if you push too hard, if you bang too hard on that door of your plans, sometimes in God's love, he'll say, okay, if you want it this bad, and he'll let you go through. But you wind up taking this massive detour. And God can totally bring you back on track. But it's wise to knock and then listen to God and not to push too hard. So, and maybe lose our souls in the process. Verse 27, for the Son of Man is going to come in his glory with all the angels and reward each person according to what they have done. But I think what Jesus is challenging these disciples to lay down their lives, to give up their life in order to save it, and to go after God with everything, not just to gain the world, but to take care of their soul. I think he was inviting them, in a lot of ways, to jump into the deep end. Like, you ever taught a kid how to swim? They don't immediately start out doing star floats on their back, laying down. What do? They cling to the edge, or they cling to you, and hopefully they don't drag you under. But what the disciple, what Peter was wanting to do, like, no, Jesus, no, let's grasp for power. Let's get rid of the oppressors. We'll grab a couple of swords and spears. And Jesus saying, no, 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 no. That's the human way. I'm going to do things differently. What Peter was wanting to do was to learn how to swim and go in the water, but stay on the deep end the whole time. Yeah, his feet would have been touching the bottom of the pool, but he would have been 6 feet under the water. He'd done it his way. What Jesus was inviting them to do is to let go and to jump into that deep water, to trust God, to let go, or maybe they were on the edge, to let go and let God take them where they were supposed to go. So what does this all mean to us? Well, the first thing is to get behind Jesus. What ways in our lives are we trying to get ahead of Jesus? Going, I think it's supposed to be over here. I think I'm supposed to do this. I think, well, it'd be nice if this could happen. We work on it, we work on it, we work on it. And sometimes we just need to say, okay, I'm going to let you lead. Things, I'm in a season of waiting right now. I'm in a season of in between these things right now. God, I'm going to get behind you. What is your plan? And when we do that, we surrender our human perspective and ask for God's perspective. We surrender the way we see it and trust that there's something bigger. Even when things seem like they're going crazy. I heard a preacher say, even when your money is funny and your world is crashing in around you, there's a way to surrender to God and say, like, okay, I need your perspective because I don't get what's going on around here. And to surrender our will, the stuff, that's a huge part of following Jesus. Jesus said, lay down your life if you want to keep it. And a huge part of that is allowing God to change the stuff you want, to change your heart. And as you surrender to that, there's this journey that you go on where you begin to want the same things God wants. Your will is changed, and it's not so focused on inward and you wanting things for yourself. And as you surrender that over and over and over again, you open up and you see the world around you, and you see this perspective of, look at all these people and things and causes outside of myself that God cares about, and your will begins to change. And when you do that, eventually, over and over and over, you begin to receive God's peace no matter what you're going through. I've sat down with so many people over the years who've known God and who've gone through real stuff, and they don't want to go through it again. But often people who've been through some hard stuff in life say, you know, it was horrible, it was scary, it hurt, I didn't know what to do, but there was this moment as I surrendered over and over again where just peace came. I was okay, whether we were lifted up or down, like I just knew God would take care of us. So I want to leave you this morning with a challenge to give God the world back. Give God your world. Maybe it's your family. An unsaved relative that you love so much, a situation that just drives you crazy. Maybe it's something you saw on Facebook or Instagram that just made you so mad and you wish you could fix that person. Give God the world back. It's not meant for us to carry. But when we get behind Jesus, we can assist where God wants to go. But when we start grasping for control of our world, and to impose our agenda, that's us trying to get ahead of Jesus. And we work much better, we function much better when we're following Jesus. So if you were at our Good Friday service, you heard Pastor Ryan do an amazing job. It was really great. And we both went to the same conference and were inspired by these two images. And I want to wrap this part of the service up with these two images. This is Atlas in front of 30 Rockefeller Center in New York City. And I had to look him up. I'm not an expert on Greek mythology, but Atlas was punished for leading a war against Zeus. This is in Greek mythology. And Atlas, as a punishment for what he had done, he was forced to carry the whole world on his shoulders. and shoulder the weight of the heavens. He's groaning and straining. And even, I thought that was interesting, that a lot of times when we're carrying heavy weights, the assumption is that God is punishing us, that we're getting what we deserve, that we're reaping what we sow, and we carry these burdens. This is in direct contrast to the words of Jesus, whose yoke is easy and his burden is light. This is a beautiful statue, very like, you know, artistically amazing, and it's in a lot of the scenes from 30 Rock. But right across the street, there's a cathedral called St. Patrick's Cathedral. And behind the altar, there's this statue that stands in contrast. So forget the robes and everything. I know it looks kind of Catholic. But what this is this is a young Jesus. And I don't know if you can see it, but in his left hand is the whole world. And I saw this week and thought, ooh, that'll preach. And all week I've been singing, he's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole wide world in his hands. Like, oh, maybe sometimes we stop singing those kids things or stop singing those reading the kids' Bible stories. But man, there were things I was carrying around. Like, this is my responsibility. I've got to fix this and fix that. I was getting ahead of Jesus. Where are you trying to get ahead of Jesus? And where can you follow and take part in? And remember that you are a supporting member in God's big story. I want to invite you to bow your heads and close your eyes this morning. And just ponder. Be sensitive to God's Spirit and just listen for a minute. And reflect on your life. What are the barriers in life that you're experiencing? Challenges. God, is there any way, any area that we haven't surrendered to you? Is there any areas of frustration with our life that we need to surrender to you this morning? God, are we living life on our own? Are we trying to do everything on our own? Will you please identify those areas to us? Bring them to mind here in this moment. We don't want to be like Atlas, trying to figure out everything on our own. We need you. Will you please, in your power that holds the whole universe as effortlessly as that statue seemed to, will you help take our burdens? Take our fears, take our anxiety. We surrender them to you.